Into hour number two. Ended hour number one by having a conversation with Myles Gaskin. Really impressed with him. Thought he showed up in a great way. Dolphins get a critical win over Jacksonville. All right, so we start our second hour. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. I'm in Southern California. I'm live. I'm in our SoCal Bay studios where I've been the entire year. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We had Myles Gaskin last segment. We've got Dietrich Wise Jr. coming up later on this hour. But as we start hour number two, we're joined right now by a linebacker for the 49ers. He's coming off a huge game, seven tackles. He had an INT. He had a pass defended. He had a quarterback hit. On the season, he's got 28 tackles, that INT, two passes defended. He allowed a passer rating of 31.3 in coverage so far this season. That is the lowest of any linebacker in the NFL. He led the team in tackles last season. He was the 70th pick overall in 2018 out of BYU. The Niners are 2-1 on the year. They're at home against Philadelphia on Sunday. Fred Warner is my guest. Fred, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you on. So you beat the Giants on Sunday. You cap off that East Coast trip that had those two wins. I want to get into some of the challenges, Fred, in a moment. But overall, how good did it feel to be flying back to the West Coast with a pair of wins?
Oh, man, it felt great. That was the goal heading over to New York, saying that we wanted to come back 2-1. And knowing that we did that, it was great. And so it was a great playing right back.
I mean, Fred, the team suffered so many injuries in that week two win over the Jets, and that's in addition to the injuries that the group already had suffered before week two. So as a defense, when you're going into week three without Nick Bosa, without Solomon Thomas and more, what was your mindset?
Next man up. That's how the NFL is. You know, guys are going to get injured. We obviously miss Nick and Solly. Those are two huge losses, not only to the defense but to the team. But there's always going to be injuries in this league, and guys got to step up. We have a very deep team, especially at D-line, and I think you saw that this past Sunday with guys stepping up and making plays and causing that disruption in the backfield.
49ers linebacker Fred Warner joining us. We did see that. Now, you had that big INT in the first half. It led to points for the offense. Can you take us through the play? Exactly what did you see?
Yeah, we were at a two-minute drill, and, you know, our coaches do a great job throughout the week putting us in positions where – you know, situational football, knowing what the offense is trying to attack us with. We knew that they liked that out of three. And before the play, our safety Tart was reminded me that they liked that route. And that formation was one of the ones we talked about. And, you know, I just kind of baited the quarterback, staying inside of three. And then as soon as he broke out, I broke in underneath him and he threw the ball right to me, and I took it home.
And Fred, you and I have talked about this in the past, but you're an absolute monster when you're in pass coverage, and the numbers do back that up. What is your approach overall to pass coverage?
Just kind of doing my job, honestly. You know, I think it's just so that's one of those things that's always come natural to me. But as I've progressed in my career, it's just things have slowed down for me. I'm starting to understand route concepts and how the offenses are trying to attack our defense. I have a great coach in DeMeco Ryans and Robert Saleh who make sure that not only me, but our whole team is prepared every week, having a BSD line up front to get after the quarterback and make things speed up a lot more so I'm able to anticipate and get my feet in the ground. And it's just everybody's working in unity at the end of the day.
We're talking to 49ers linebacker Fred Warner now. On offense, Nick Mullins was playing in the place of Jimmy Garoppolo. What do you make of the way he stepped into that role and threw for nearly 350 yards?
Oh, he did outstanding, and I expected nothing less. You know, Nick, he's been great for us, regardless of if he's the starter or not. He always prepares as if he is the starter. You know, he came out, and we told him that we had his back no matter what. Told him to protect the football, and that's exactly what he did. He was slinging it back there, got his confidence, and made smart decisions. And so, you know, we love Nick, and he's going to continue to be great for us as long as we need him.
If I understand this whole next man up concept, but you guys lost a lot of guys and a lot of key guys, a lot of important guys. I think a lot of teams might look at the injuries and feel somewhat snake bitten or maybe even depressed. What does a win like that say about the depth of the team, but also the mental toughness that you're going to battle no matter what, despite missing that many talented players?
Yeah, this whole building is made up of the right people. I think all the players are just a reflection of our head coach and GM, you know, Kyle. He's as real as they come, and he makes sure we're not only physically prepared every week, but mentally as well. You know, I think we all have that mindset of it doesn't matter what's going on. You know, it doesn't matter if all things are going wrong. We're gonna smile in the face of adversity and attack it head on.
I mean, Fred, you'd have to, right? Because that trip to the East Coast, it was not exactly only about the injuries, right? There were other things going on. You mentioned the head coach, Kyle Shanahan. He talked about the fact that the team plane got hit on the runway. You were delayed for several hours. Then you beat the Jets. Then multiple guys get hurt. Then you go to the Greenbrier, and the MRI truck breaks down. I mean, it's one thing to have these injuries, but everything else that was going on off the field, overall, man, what was that trip like?
Man, Murphy's Law. Whatever can go wrong is going to go wrong. And so that was the theme of this past trip. And we, like I said, man, we just took it and ran with it. I don't think anybody was worried about what was going on. We controlled what we could control, and we had a great week of practice and got after it on Sunday.
You know, Fred, there's always that talk about a Super Bowl hangover when it comes to how teams respond the year after going and losing. Have you noticed anything like that, or does it feel like, if anything, the guys are more motivated after that?
For sure more motivated. I haven't seen any type of, you know, thing like that where people talk about the hangover from the Super Bowl. The last thing we're thinking about is the Super Bowl. We're thinking about just taking it one week at a time, one day at a time, giving it our all. And, you know, it's going to be hard. That's just the league. And just to be able to get to that point, there's so much work that needs to be put in before that. And so we're just worried about Philadelphia Eagles right now and putting a great week of work in.
Talking to Fred Warner of the 49ers for a few more moments. Now, before the season, you did spend some time on the reserve COVID-19 list. As you said, quote, "I really do not want to get into the nitty-gritty and the details behind it, but it sucked," end of quote. So with respect to that, how tough was it to be away from the team at that time? And then how good did it feel when you're able to come back and rejoin your teammates?
Oh, man, it sucks so much. Just being away from them and feeling like I was letting the team down just by not being there, you know, being the Mike backer and being one of the leaders of the team, you know, I felt like it was my responsibility to be out there and getting ready for Arizona. And so it did suck. But when I came back, it was great. You know, everybody was happy to have me back and say how much they missed me. But, you know, that whole situation definitely sucked, being stuck in the house for 10 days.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I don't appreciate that you got stuck, but I appreciate your candor on that. And even more so when you consider you were named one of the team captains before the season. Knowing the conversations that you and I have had in the past and the ones that I've had with Kalani Sitake about you, I'm not surprised. But what does that honor mean to you? And then how do you approach your role as a leader, and especially on a team like that with a locker room like that?
You know, it means the world, honestly. That's my greatest accomplishment to this day. You know, when your peers think that highly of you, that they want you to lead them, and honestly, my job is just to serve them, do whatever I can to help them, you know, in any way that I can, and be there for them. I think that's my job, and being as consistent as I can day in and day out.
Hey, Fred, as long as we're talking about captains, how about your younger brother, Troy? He's a captain at BYU this year. How would you describe his game, and then how proud are you of your younger bro?
Oh, man, proud. I can't even start to describe it, man. I mean, the fact that he was voted captain after all the injuries and adversity he's had to go through at BYU. You know, he's such a tremendous talent, and he hasn't been able to really put that on display like he wants to, just because of the injuries. But now that he's fully healthy and he's out there flying around, you know, I think he does it all. You know, he covers, he can come down in the run game and make those tackles, make plays on the football, and he's just going to continue to get better and better. He's such a smart player, and, you know, the sky's the limit for him.
That's really cool. Fred, one last thought. Speaking of physicality, one of the things that came up in camp was that you were playing with a lot of physicality, which is not unusual for you, but you even got into a shoving match with Raheem Mostert. But at that time, he said, quote, "That's the type of approach that you want when you're not having a preseason. It's definitely important to have those intense style practices in which you can go out there and thud up. We aren't live tackling, but you still get something out of it," end quote. So I'm curious, what was it like to get ready for a season without a regular preseason? And then how important was it that you brought some thumping to help the offense?
I'm not going to lie, it was a lot different. It was a lot different of an offseason in general, but just this training camp, having to just hit your own teammates, you know, for the entire training camp all the way up to the first game of the season. You know, I think it was really important for us to get those reps where we are thudding each other. You know, with Raheem, that's just iron sharpening iron. You know, he's one of the best in the league at what he does. And to be able to compete against him day in and day out made me such a better player. And I think that just goes to the rest of the team. You know, I mean, you saw battles like Nick Bosa versus Trent Williams, and that's just why our team is so special, and just being able to compete and putting ourselves in a position to be successful heading into the season.
And that is iron sharpening iron. The 49ers are 2-1 coming off that road trip to New York. Philadelphia is at San Francisco on Sunday. Their linebacker, Fred Warner, having another big year. Fred, I appreciate you, the relationship, and the conversation. Man, thank you so much. Great to have you back, Fred.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Have a great day. You too, Fred. What a pro. That's a professional organization, isn't it, the 49ers? And they showed so much in the way they handled themselves on that trip. You could try and argue, great, Rome. Who did they beat? The two worst teams in the NFL. Arguably, but for them to be there, have to stay there, deal with the injuries they had, and I'm talking serious injuries, not just like next man up type injuries, but I'm talking about all pros, pro bowlers, future Hall of Famer or two, key guys, 9 starting players that went down, and they still handled their business. And like we talked about, they were having all sorts of issues off of the field as well, things that were totally out of their control. An MRI truck breaking down, the plane getting hit on the runway, a several-hour delay, none of it mattered. And they handled their business. Why? Because they are a professional organization, top to bottom. Ownership all the way down. Ownership, GM, coach, players. Fred Warner epitomizes that. All right, so we are moving through hour number two now. 1-800-636-8686. Back to that top story. The NFL announced this morning that 3 Tennessee Titan players and 5 team personnel members tested positive for COVID. And while there have been false positives in the past, that's not the case here. Kevin Seifert of ESPN tweeted, quote, "Unfortunately, I can confirm via a league source that all of these COVID-19 tests have been confirmed positive. The NFL has completed the protocol that would have determined if any were false positive, they weren't," end quote. As a result, it was announced that the Titans facilities will be closed until Saturday and all in-person activities have been suspended. The Minnesota Vikings, who played the Titans this past Sunday, have also closed their facility and they have suspended in-person activities as well. Charles Robinson from Yahoo posted the following tweets, quote, "I'm told the Titans and Vikings both had personnel in the building early this morning. Both franchises began sending people home around 6 a.m. and sending instructions to those not in the building to only arrive for drive-up COVID testing and then to return home after." Quote, "I'm told both the Titans and Vikings franchises became aware of a COVID outbreak late Monday, early Tuesday, and began contact tracing. It included contact tracing on the Titans return flight, which is suggestive that an infected person was in the team's traveling party and on the plane." He goes on, quote, "More on Titans and Vikings. Minnesota is anticipating positive tests will surface, but important to add that there was a period during the contract tracing by the Falcons last week that Atlanta thought the same thing and everybody came back negative. This is still fluid for many." End of tweet. Again, the Titans are supposed to play the Steelers on Sunday. At this point, the game is still on. The Titans will have to prepare for it remotely, which means they're not going to be able to practice, which pretty much means that they will not be able to prepare. So you've got to wonder exactly how fair it would be to proceed with a game on Sunday when one team is dealing with a COVID outbreak and is not going to be able to practice. And again, the NFL has done an amazing job so far. They made it through 3 weeks without a serious COVID situation, but now they have one. So it is fluid, and we'll see how that plays out. 1-800-636-8686. D-Rod2203, tweeting back to our number one, quote, "Does that make you feel good, Chris? Jerome is so wasted. Every time he calls, it's like you're fighting out of your weight. Mercy rule the poor old-timer." Like I said, is that even good sport anymore? Johnny in Texas tweets, "I really think Chris is a badass caller, but the obliteration of Slurome must end now." Jamie in Green Bay tweets, "RIP, Jerome." Stocknut is in. Quote, okay, I'm on board. Chris won. What? You needed that round to declare a winner? You hadn't heard enough yet? Mike and LFK wore the wizard lettuce. I'll take some. All right. Use that telephone number. It's open. Other topics still. Man, how busy a day is this? Doc Rivers gets fired. He mutually agreed with Steve Ballmer to step down. And I haven't even gotten to that yet. NBA Finals getting underway tomorrow. I have not gotten to that yet. MLB playoffs getting underway. I have not gotten to that yet. Damn, there's a lot going on. All good. Coming up at 40 past, I've got Dietrich Wise Jr., a defensive end for the Patriots, who look good so far. That's coming up, too. Oh, one programming note. Guess who is on the Jim Rohn podcast tomorrow? One guess. If you guessed the Mad Dog, Mark Mattson, you got it correct.
Thank you.
How awesome is that? It came up when we were talking about Jeff Perlman and his latest Lakers book. We were talking about how the Mad Dog was universally beloved. Shaq loved him. Kobe loved him. We love him. Everybody loves him. So we were talking about, man, that's it. That's the guy. And sure enough, old man Rit got him to commit. Yeah! I'm a poet and I didn't know it. Also, Israel Adesanya not only won impressively, convincingly, but styled that win. And his opponent saw the tape and didn't like it and called him something like a human piece of garbage or trash.
Garbage!
That's coming up. Mike Leach doing Mike Leach things in the SEC. Man, I got to jam all that in to the rest of this show. Good luck with that. Have fun with that, Rome. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Probably the only call that has made it to air today is Chris in Wisco. Man, this guy is on some kind of heater. Not that it's hard for him to do, but I think he's been racked 9 times in a row now. It's an amazing hit rate. He's that good. I mean, it's one thing to get racked every time you call, but if you only call once or twice or 3 times a year, that's one thing. This guy's called like 9 times. And normally, well, I want to say normally we don't keep track, but we do. Now, I'm not keeping track closely enough to know if that number is either 8 or 9, but it's 8 or 9. In the very least, it's 7, and it might be as many as 9. But he has not been racked. Every single time he's been racked. 100% hit rate. Hey, Rome Slice. Can you hear me, Mad Dog?
Can you hear me, Mad Dog?
Coach Paterno, I can hear you great.
Can you hear me, Mad Dog?
Can you hear me, Mad Dog?
Regards, old man Rit on the phone, booking Mark Mattson for the podcast. Geoff and Lincoln, can you hear me, Mad Dog? Rit got it done. Mad Dog committed. The Jim Rohn podcast drops every Wednesday afternoon after this show. And it will drop tomorrow afternoon after this show. And the Mad Dog, Mark Mattson, what a great human being. He will regale us, I'm sure, with stories about the Lakers. He's currently a coach now. And we'll talk to him about his program. He was a Stanford great. Shaq loved him, took him under his wing. And he'll have lots of stories to tell. And again, that was... the impetus for that was Jeff Perlman's book, which just dropped about the Lakers and Shaq and Kobe. And there were some great Mark Mattson stories in that book, too. 1-800-636-8686. Speaking of basketball, Doc Rivers out as Clippers head coach. He stepped down yesterday in what Steve Ballmer referred to as, quote, a mutual decision. Sure it wasn't. Yeah, because Doc was just going to quit after one of the most embarrassing choke jobs ever. Sure he wasn't. Doc's not built like that. Yeah, just as Ballmer was not going to be coming for somebody after witnessing one of the biggest choke jobs ever. Sure he wasn't. But Doc is a beloved figure in the sport and in this town. And Ballmer did him a solid by saying that it was a mutual decision, even if it was not. Now, Doc, classy as the day is long, tweeted a statement that read in part, quote, thank you, Clipper Nation, for allowing me to be your coach and for all your support in helping make this a winning franchise. When I took this job, my goals were to make this a winning basketball program, a free agent destination, and to bring a championship to this organization. He went on, quote, while I was able to accomplish most of my goals, I won't be able to see them all through. Though it was a disappointing ending to our season, you are right there, and I know what this team is capable of accomplishing with your support. End quote. So as you might expect, that's a thoroughly gracious statement from one of the best people in that sport. One of the best people in any sport. And while Doc is taking the fall for the way that team choked and the way that team underachieved, let's not forget a couple of things here, all right? Number one, Doc saved that organization. Flat out fact, he saved it. He saved the Clippers when Donald Sterling was running them into the ground. Because when all that bleep was coming down, Doc was the one who stepped up. Doc was the one who was leading from the front. Not only did he save that organization, he took it to a whole new level. Because there were plenty of good coaches who had been the head coach of the Clippers before, and that team was still a joke. He held that team together after Sterling. He held that team together as Chris Paul and Blake Griffin were dealt. That's not easy. Think about this. The Clippers are moving on from a head coach because he didn't win an NBA championship. Think about that statement. That's a sentence that has never been said before. The Clippers are moving on from their coach because he was unable to win an NBA championship. See, that's because he changed all that. There have been countless times on numerous issues when things have been really hard and Doc Rivers was the one to step forward when others would look for the exit. And now he's the one heading out to the exit. He knew the expectations. He knew the expectations for this season and said after they lost Game 7 to Denver that they were not met.
We didn't meet them. That's the bottom line. I'm the coach, and I'll take any blame for it. But we didn't meet our expectations, clearly. Because we had, in my opinion, we'd still be playing.
All right, so you go through a choke job like that. You underachieve like that. Someone's getting fired. Somebody is getting fired. And somebody should be fired. But is that the right guy to get fired? Is that the right call? Did they get the right guy? Is it the right call? If you're the Clippers, it better be. Again, somebody had to go. That's a fact. You can't lose the way they did. And then just run it back next year with the same exact group. Despite Paul George thinking that that was just year one of a multi-year project and that you should run it back. Hey, by the way, that's an all-time bad take, Paul. Even worse now than when you said it several days ago.
It's year one.
A bad take. But is Rivers the right guy to go? Like, there's no guarantee that you're going to get somebody better than Doc Rivers. But he probably does make sense. He probably makes sense as the guy to go because they weren't going to dump Kawhi Leonard. They weren't going to dump Paul George. But Kawhi and PG better wear a ton of this. They should not be skating the way they are. Kawhi was supposed to be the ultimate closer, a terminator who doesn't feel pressure. He's impervious, a guy who battles and finishes no matter what. And yet he disappeared completely in the fourth quarter with the season on the line. Not only did he not play well, he didn't even look like he wanted to play at all. And then you had Paul George doing things like this.
George, way off. It's the side of the backboard.
See, Doc Rivers was not the one disappearing in the fourth quarter. Doc Rivers was not the one bricking shots off the side of the glass. The two superstars were. The two stars were completely outclassed and outplayed by Jamal and the Joker. If either Kawhi or PG show up in the fourth quarter of any of those games, Doc Rivers probably still has a job right now. But they didn't. They choked, and now Rivers is the one paying the price. Look, I know the Clippers face challenges. They did. They had players coming and going from the bubble, but so did the Denver Nuggets. The Clippers had some new players this year, but so did the Lakers. I mean, seriously, have you seen that Laker roster? Not only new pieces like Anthony Davis and Danny Green, but man, they had some characters now. They have got some characters on that roster. Dwight Howard, J.R. Smith, Dion Waiters. Others too. And they all seem to get along pretty well. In fact, better than pretty well. They're in the finals. They're heavy favorites in the finals. Now, that's not to say that Doc was perfect in the postseason. Doc wasn't. He's got that ugly track record of losing three series with a 3-1 lead. He's not perfect. He's not without blame. But neither was Kawhi or PG or Montrez or Lou Williams. I can keep going. What I'm saying is this, as I go to break, it takes a village to choke that badly. When you gag away a 3-1 series lead and three straight double-digit leads, that's never on one person. That's a group choke. That's a group effort. That's a collective commitment to choking. This group was determined to choke. So somebody had to go. And that somebody was Doc. And I've got more thoughts on that. I need to get out right now. I'm not sure they can do better, but they better do better. If you're going to fire that guy, you better do better. And we'll see what they do. When we come back, I will finish my thoughts on that. Doc's the guy who takes the fall. But believe me, he is far from the only one to blame. In fact, I'm not even sure I'd start with him. Dietrich Wise Jr. joins me when we come back. We'll talk some Patriots football with him. First up, though, here is your bottom of the hour sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
It is a good day. A really good day. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. It's a good day because we are covering so many things. A lot of NFL today. It's Tuesday. As part of that, we're joined right now by a defensive end for the New England Patriots. He is a Super Bowl champion. Five tackles, a quarterback hit, a half a sack, a fumble recovery, and a touchdown. Seven tackles, three quarterback hits, that half sack, and that fumble recovery on the season. He played his college ball at Arkansas. He was the 131st pick overall in 2017. He is the founder of DietrichWise.com. Patriots 2-1 on the year, and they have got a big one at Kansas City on Sunday, a CBS game, 4:25 p.m. Eastern. Dietrich Wise Jr. is my guest. Dietrich, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Good, good. So you're coming off that big win over the Raiders on Sunday. Let me start you right there. Las Vegas had turned in a really impressive performance against New Orleans on Monday night last week. So what was your approach going into that game?
Our approach was just to stop their momentum, stop their run, and limit them to a one-dimensional offense.
I'll tell you what, I just want to skip right to the very best part. Fourth quarter, the Raiders have the ball on the six-yard line. What was going through your head before that snap?
Well, just pretty much we got the call in, and the only thing that was going through my head was execute the call and play your fundamentals. And when the ball snapped, I did just that. And I guess a great thing happened afterwards.
That's funny. A great thing did happen afterwards. And the reason I bring that right to the front, because you described the play also like this, quote, the linebacker gave us the call. After that, I looked at Shalik, and I told him, hey, let's run a game. He nodded. As we put our hands down on the ground, we both could hear the heartbeats thumping, knowing that that was going to be a big moment. End of quote. It's a really good description by you. It sounds like something out of a movie. Is that the way it felt to you?
That's the way it felt to me at that moment. Yes, it did.
We're talking to Dietrich Wise Jr. Now, Derek Carr drops back. You drive the lineman back into the end zone. What do you remember about what happened next? How did that play out?
Well, I first want to say it's a big testament to the whole defensive line. Not only did I pull the rusher guy back, but Shalik coming off the edge, coming back to the inside, Chase and Adam as well, pushing their guys back so he had an opportunity to step up, and the DBs being able to shut down the coverage, leaving him nowhere to just leaving him to step up into the attack of Shalik and I. And it was a pretty cool experience. We did such that, bull rushed the line, sacked Derek Carr, and it was just great celebrating with the teammates.
I mean, obviously it takes 11, and everybody's got to do their job, but man, that is not an easy or likely thing. So when that ball comes out, how did it feel to recover it for a TD?
I saw the ball pop out as it was going down. I tried to grab it, and then once we both hit to the ground, I picked the ball up, and my first thing was just showcase the ref that I have the ball, that the ball is in my hand. And it's not a safety. It's a touchdown.
Okay, see, that's the thing. You knew that, but others did not. In fact, the officials did not. They initially ruled it a safety. You knew that it was not. What was your reaction initially when they did rule it a safety?
I mean, I don't know. I was just so excited that I had the ball and that we was all celebrating. And I guess someone said that they review all the safeties or points that are scored. So I was like, once they review it, no, it's a touchdown, not a safety.
Dietrich Wise Jr., my guest. Something else I have to make clear. You've said that not only was that not your first NFL touchdown or just your first NFL touchdown, that was your first touchdown on any level. I mean, was that your first touchdown ever? And if so, man, what did that feel like when they overturned that call and they ruled it a touchdown?
Man, we was very elated on the sideline, as you could tell. Once they ruled it a touchdown and they verified it, the sideline went crazy, and that was just the best part, man. We were just excited, a joyful moment, definitely one to remember forever.
Dietrich Wise Jr. is joining us. Now, the touchdown was huge, but it's all part of a larger picture of your game right now. As an example, Bill Belichick said this about you, quote, he's played the run game. That's an area that he really focused on in the offseason and in training camp, and we did as well. He and Coach DeMarcus Covington really worked hard on that. I think his run defense has improved. He's given us a lot of solid play there, end of quote. So what was your approach when it came to improving your run defense, and then how does it feel to have it recognized, and especially by Bill Belichick?
Well, it feels great. It's a big testament to actually my brother and father starting the offseason. We all worked together making sure that I had my fundamentals down, my technique down, so when I came into camp, I'll showcase what I've learned over the offseason. And it was a pretty big offseason, as you might see. But then also working with DeMarcus Covington, him and Joe Kim just allowing me to actually slow the game down and shoot my hands, repetition. My father always said repetition is the father of learning. So just doing something over and over again until it became comfortable and second nature. And then now the only thing I had to do was just showcase those skills every game. And it's a big accomplishment, but I'm nowhere near finished yet.
Dietrich Wise Jr. joining us. I'm glad you brought your family up. I was going to myself. We talked about your family earlier this year. Your brother Solomon is playing at UT San Antonio. They're currently undefeated. They're 3-0. How proud are you of what he's doing this year?
As an older brother, you always look at your younger brothers and wish the best for them. And Solomon's doing a wonderful job. His role is growing over there at UTSA. He's doing an awesome job playing multiple roles, playing positions, a leader of his team, and the best is yet to come for him.
Hey, listen, what about your team?
Daniel Wise, my second brother, yep. He played for the Dallas Cowboys last year. Right now he's a free agent, but he's definitely working hard to get back on the team.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Exactly. I was talking to Fred Warner earlier today, and we were talking about his younger brother at BYU, and he has the exact same pride. And I can see it. You know, there have been significant changes to your team since last year, but you guys just keep rolling. How do you explain the fact that almost literally, no matter what happens, this team just keeps finding different ways to win?
This is because of our leadership. We have great leaders on our team. David Andrews, Lawrence Guy, the McCourty brothers, Matthew Slater. Guys like that who always keep the team focused, keep the team exactly where they need to be starting each game. And it doesn't matter who we bring in, who's not here or who is here. The only thing that matters that we have those leaders on our team, and they also help us guide us to victories every week.
Dietrich Wise Jr. joining me for a few more moments. One of the new guys, of course, Cam Newton. He came in over the summer. He won that starting job. He's one of the team captains this year. What has it been like having him as your quarterback?
I mean, it's awesome. He's a great guy, super hard worker, very intelligent, and looking forward to seeing him do well for the rest of the season.
I mean, like, how would you describe him as a leader and as a captain?
Well, he brings a different experience. When guys come from other teams, they always bring what they know from their past experiences to the team, and he has done such that. He's brought energy. He's led in that category, always coming in with a good attitude, with a positive smile, always bringing the energy in practice, making it a great atmosphere to learn and also have fun. And the energy and leadership that he has brought to the offense is definitely being showcased every Sunday.
And I would imagine, I'm not there, Dietrich, but I would imagine juice, right? Lots of juice every single day.
Lots of it. Yes, sir.
All right, so this weekend you've got Kansas City, which means you're going to face Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense. What is the key to stopping Patrick Mahomes?
We just have to play together, do our job as a team, and focus on the things that we need to focus on to win the game.
All right, that's going to be a big one. That's coming up this weekend. You've got the Patriots. They're 2-1. That's a CBS game, in fact. New England at Kansas City on Sunday. Dietrich Wise Jr., defensive end, coming off a big game against the Raiders. Dietrich, great to have you back. Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You have a wonderful day. You have yourself a wonderful day if you want to, and I know you do. Good to talk some Patriots football here. Dietrich had a huge game. Big play in the end zone. Imagine what that must feel like. I have no idea. What would that feel like to get to that level and score your first touchdown ever? Like, he had never scored a touchdown on any level. And then to score that touchdown and have the officials immediately signal it's a safety. Oh, hell no, it's not. It's a touchdown. My first touchdown. Not only my first NFL touchdown, my first touchdown ever. All right, so good to have him. The interview portion of this program is now complete. So we are wide open. 1-800-636-8686. Finishing those thoughts on Doc Rivers. As I mentioned, something had to happen. Somebody had to go. You do not blow a 3-1 lead. You don't blow a 3-1 lead and then blow a 3-1 lead the way they blew that 3-1 lead, with double-digit leads in each of the last three games. You don't blow that and then not have that cost somebody their gig. And it did. And it cost Doc Rivers. The question is, did they get the right guy? Because who are you going to fire if not Doc? Who's going to go? An assistant coach isn't going to get it done. You got to fire the guy responsible. So I'm not saying that it's not the right thing. I'm saying they better get the right guy if that's what they're going to do. As an example, if Kristaps Porzingis were healthy in that Dallas series, the only thing worse than the Clippers not making the conference finals than the Clippers going out in the second round, man, they could have gone out in the first round. If Porzingis were healthy, they could have gone out in the first round. That's how dysfunctional and jacked up the Clippers were. And the chemistry issues that everybody knew about all year long never did get resolved. And I've got to say, some of that's on Doc, obviously. When Doc is the ultimate players guy and players respond to Doc and everybody loves Doc, how did he not get that turned around? How did he not get that resolved? Part of that's definitely on him. However, it's also going to be on the players. They're not without responsibility. This whole notion of chemistry, like the chemistry's off, therefore it's got to be the coach's problem completely. That's not the case. Where is the responsibility with the players? They're the ones with the jacked up chemistry, not the coach. Like, for some reason, a collection of allegedly professional grown-ass men could not figure out their differences over the course of an extremely extended season, could not figure out how to show up and do their job to the best of their abilities, could not figure it out, could not figure out how to coexist. So that's not all on the coach. The players also bear the responsibility. So I don't know if the Clippers can get a better coach than Doc Rivers. I just know they better get a better coach than Doc Rivers. And the players better come back better than they were across the board. They need to be better players, better leaders, better teammates, better in the locker room, better on the floor. And when the going does get tough, they can't disappear because that's their rep now. Getting rid of Doc means they're out of excuses. I mean, this was already on Kawhi, PG, and the fellas. Next year, it really is going to be on them because there's nowhere to hide. Close is not good enough. Better step up, fellas. Welcome to the real world of having expectations and needing to meet those expectations. Like, this was not all about their personal struggles, adversity in the bubble. Man, this is about a team. I mean, yes, there was a lot of that, but a lot of other teams had that. No, this was about a team that choked under the big expectations. Major underachievers, and it got their coach fired, and a rap that none of them want, that pretty much all of them deserve. Hope that was worth it. And as always, I know it wasn't. And if Doc wants another job, Doc's going to get another job without having to wait that long at all. The question is, who gets that?